You're listening to JD and Tammy Rucker as we deliver the NOQ report, or as we like to call it, the NOQ report. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and enjoy.
Between China, Russia, North Korea, and some of our other enemies, or at least nations that want the United States to fail, including many here domestically who apparently want us to fail as well, it's easy to forget about Iran. The Middle Eastern nation of Iran has, well, really for over 40 years, they have seen us, seen the United States, as the great Satan. We are their mortal enemy, whether they're willing to sign deals with us or not, willing to do whatever, you know, get to the John Kerry, get him to give away a bunch of stuff and get President Obama to give away a bunch of money to them. You know, they'll negotiate with us. They'll talk to us. But in reality, the regime led by the Ayatollah, they hate us. And new intelligence is telling us from multiple fronts. I shouldn't, you know, intelligence is one of those things where, you know, you hear it and you think, oh, there's a piece of intelligence. We're seeing from multiple pieces of intelligence that Iran agents, Iranian-backed terrorists are here in the United States, many of them even in Washington, D.C. itself. Now, this is a fantastic scoop, so to speak. I know that there have been a handful that are willing to talk about it, but for the most part, there's been radio silence, despite the fact that our own government and even members of our media world, journalists, have participated in and intercepted communications between various Iranian, we'll call them assets, for lack of a better term. We don't want to call them terrorists until they commit terrorism. I know that seems backwards, but let's be fair. We don't know with 100% certainty what their goal is, though the stated goal, as well as the most obvious choice, is that they are here to commit acts of terrorism. And I don't say that lightly. You know, anyone who's watched my show before knows that I don't go out and make bold, outrageous claims very lightly. Well, these assets, terrorists, whatever you'd like to call them, have been communicating directly with Iran, the nation, the government, the military. Now, we hear about militias, okay? And we see militias here in the United States, and we think that when we hear about militias in Iran or Iranian-backed militias in Iraq or elsewhere, Syria, we sometimes think, oh, it's just a ragtag group. No, that's not how it works. These militias are very well organized. They are funded, okay, by various organizations, including the Iranian government, and they coordinate with the direct military of these governments, especially Iran. Here's an article from Gatestone Institute, just dropped early this morning. Says, attention, President Biden, Yemen's Houthi rebels are Iranian-backed terrorists. Okay, you know, I'm not the only one saying it, but I'm talking about terrorists here in the United States. We'll get to that here shortly. According to this article, the Houthis have used the sophisticated weaponry they have received from Iran, such as drones and ballistic missiles, to broaden the conflict into neighboring Saudi Arabia, which is leading the coalition military campaign to reestablish Yemen's democratically elected government. U.S. sanctions were promptly denounced by humanitarian and aid agencies, which claimed that designating the Houthis as terrorists would impede the global effort to help Yemen's starving population, an argument that appears perverse as the Houthis control most of the key aid supply routes and regularly steal aid supplies to sell on the black market and fund their terrorist operations. If you weren't paying attention, let me break it down for you. There are those who do not want the Houthis to be designated as terrorists because they think that it's going to hurt the Yemeni people even more, and they are hurting folks. I mean, they are in very, very bad shape. We're talking true humanitarian crisis, okay? People dying of starvation, people dying for lack of medicine, people dying unnecessarily. And it's not that aid isn't being sent, it's just not making it to them. And that's the problem. They say, don't call the Houthis terrorists, except that the Houthis, number one, are terrorists. Number two, they are stopping much of the aid from getting to the people who actually need it. It's disgusting, but yeah, that's the catch-22 that we're stuck in. And we're not stuck. I shouldn't say we're stuck in it. This is a problem for the Middle East. I'm a big fan of letting the Middle East sort out its own problems. But we are talking about an ally in Saudi Arabia. Now, I've had challenges myself with Saudi Arabia. I continue to have challenges with Saudi Arabia, the government of Saudi Arabia, the House of Saud. But when it comes to being an ally, they have been very, very useful to us. So we don't want them to be harmed or continue to be harmed, because that there will prevent the aid that does need to get to the innocent Yemeni people. So far this month, the Houthis have launched more than 20 drone and missile attacks against predominantly civilian targets in Saudi Arabia. In the most high-profile attack, the Houthis used an explosive-laden drone and a ballistic missile against the Saudi petroleum plant at Ras Tanura, prompting global oil prices to rise above $70 a barrel earlier this week, its highest in more than a year. Look, we can talk all day, we can talk all year about how, you know, we need to be energy independent. That seems to be kind of off the table with the Biden administration, but we still need to shoot for it. We still need to continue to break ourselves from the dominance, the unnatural dominance, we should say, that Middle Eastern countries, that OPEC has over oil production, oil sales, and oil prices. I say it's unnatural because it really isn't necessary. We would just open up trade, number one, open up our own production of oil. Things would change dramatically. We've been doing a fine job. President Trump did a fine job. You can even go all the way back to President Reagan doing a fine job when it comes to making us as close to energy independent as possible. Unfortunately, within the era of climate change hysteria, there's always going to be a roadblock, especially when Democrats control the House, the Senate, and the White House. But let's get a little bit closer to home. You know, here in just a few minutes, I'm going to have former mayor of Shiloh, Israel, David Rubin, joining us from Jerusalem. He has seen intelligence. He has heard the buzz, the scuttlebutt, so to speak, that Iran does have operatives, agents, terrorists here in the United States, especially and particularly in Washington, D.C. And there have been discussions of imminent terrorist attacks. I want to be clear again, if this is your first time listening to Knock Report, number one, you should subscribe, or I think they're now calling it follow us on Apple Podcasts, wherever. You won't find us on Spotify. They banned us. I'm not bitter about that at all. But you will find us on Pandora, iHeartRadio. You'll find us on, if you still use Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, you'll find us there as well. Well, the Twitter Knock Report. Twitter for Knock Report was banned, but the JD Rucker, that's me, the JD Rucker Twitter account is still alive and well until they ban me, which I'm sure they will, because I just don't have a good enough filter to prevent that from happening. Facebook, we are there at Freedom First Network. Same with on YouTube. We had our Freedom First Network YouTube channel deleted, our big one. And now we have Freedom First Coffee YouTube channel, which has, I think, 4 subscribers. We don't care. We're not worried about those. Our focus is on the podcast. It's on Rumble. It's on Locals. FFN, that's Foxtrot, Foxtrot, November. FFN.locals.com. You can find all of our content there. Of course, you can find it at freedomfirstnetwork.com. You can find my stuff at noqreport.com, knockreport.com. We want to make sure that people can find us. You can find us on Brighteon, BitChute. We're on Gab, Parler, MeWe, Minds, Cloud Hub. There's so many of them. And it's important that you are able to find us. But again, most important one as far as when it comes to the podcast rankings, we do want you to follow Knock Report on Apple Podcasts. I'm not trying to fill time, I promise. I do want to go over a couple more stories before we get to the Mayor David Rubin, as he talks about what he's heard, what he's seen, what he knows about Iranian terrorists here in the United States. But here's a story that came out yesterday. It was actually widely reported. I will give them credit, them being mainstream media. I will give them credit that a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them did run this particular story here regarding Kevin McCarthy, you know, House Minority Leader. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. This article comes from The Right Scoop, titled "Border Agents Catching Illegals from Yemen and Iran." And this is from Kevin McCarthy, who is at the border, or at least he was yesterday. Kevin McCarthy is at the border on Monday in El Paso and reported that agents are telling him that they aren't just catching illegals from Mexico and Latin America, but also Yemen, Iran, and Sri Lanka. There's a video. You know what? Let's just go ahead and play it. Let's play Kevin. Stand by.
We asked him, which countries are people coming from? Yemen, Iran, Sri Lanka. That's what's coming across. And they're finding, they even talked about Chinese as well.
Okay. So for the record, it's not Sri Lanka. It's Sri Lanka. But yeah, you know what? He also said Iran, which is Iran. But whatever. You know what? I'm not going to be a foreign nation pronunciation snob. I'll just, you know. This guy's from California. You'd think he'd know these things. Anyway, Kevin McCarthy. Oh, God love him. Anyway, so yeah, he's there. And border agents are telling him that they're catching people from Iran coming across the border, the southern border of the United States, because of course we have open borders. See our show yesterday where we discussed that and the fact that they're going to be more unaccompanied alien children crossing the border in the first year of Joe Biden's administration than there were in the entirety of President Trump's 4 years in office. Think about that. According to the article, I know this isn't a shock to any of you, but all of this is happening because of Biden's horrific border policies. People from around the world are coming because they know Biden will welcome them in. In this video, McCarthy says that they also told him they're catching people on the terrorist watch list. Should we listen to this one? Let me play a second. Let's make sure I know which one it is. Oh, yeah. Okay, let's play this one. Stand by.
What we found now, they're telling me there's things they've never seen before, and it's growing every day. More fentanyl than they've ever seen coming across. More challenge of who's on a terrorist watch list. You know, the security and safety of Americans are the number one issue that a president should have. And these policies that he has changed had made us less safe. And what's happening is not just about these young children that, as a father, it breaks my heart to sit there and look at them and think that they risk this. We talked to one family from Honduras. We asked them how long they've been traveling. 22 days. You want to know why it was 22 days? Because 30 days ago, they heard what President Biden said, and he decided to make the trek.
So the migrants tell you that they believed that they were going to be able to get in and that they perhaps could get amnesty and stay.
Exactly. That's why they're coming. The president of Mexico calls President Biden the migrant president. He's creating it. He's creating problems in Mexico itself. Why we had an agreement with the countries in Central America that we would look for asylum while they were still in their country and not come up. Because what happens is these coyotes are making tremendous amounts of money. These cartels, things that we haven't seen before. This is what is happening. This is what's going on our border. And for President Biden, I sent him a letter a week ago to sit down and let's talk about this. Doesn't even acknowledge it. He needs to come to this border, look what has happened on what he has created, and change it.
There's a few more videos in that particular article of Kevin McCarthy at the border. I'm glad that he went down there. You know, he does have to take more of a leadership role. I know he's only the minority leader of the House, but he hopes to be the Speaker of the House come 2023. Following a successful Republican 2022 election. That's at least the hope. There's a lot of people that are like, oh, you know, he's a rhino. I think that he's a moderate, but not necessarily rhino. There is a difference. Okay. I think he's a California moderate. Okay. But he's not, you know, Paul Ryan was a rhino. And some would say that Paul Ryan's policies were more conservative in certain areas than McCarthy's. We should do a show. What is the difference between a moderate and a rhino? I'll take a moderate all day, because at least with a moderate, and I, you know, people will say, like, Lisa Murkowski's considered a moderate. No, she's not. She's a leftist. Okay. She's not a moderate. She's not a Republican. She's a Republican in name only. You can say the same about Susan Collins, Mitt Romney, and a handful of others in the House. McCarthy, I don't think he's a rhino. I think he is a moderate. He's not as conservative as he needs to be, at least by my taste, but at least he does believe in republicanism and preserving the Republic of the United States of America. But I digress. Let's get back to Iran. We got one more story real quick, just to show, you know, what has happened. I'll be asking Mr. David Rubin here in just a couple minutes. I'll be asking Mr. David Rubin about his perspectives on, you know, this saber rattling that Iran has been doing, and they have, you know, and it conspicuously started as soon as Biden was inaugurated. Coincidence? I think not, but we'll ask Mr. Rubin. This article also came out yesterday. Monday afternoon, says Iran touts new missile base amid soft stance by Biden. Okay, there we go. Iran unveiled a major ballistic missile facility amid ongoing appeasement by Joe Biden. On Monday, Iranian state media showed video footage of what it called the, quote, missile city ran by the Guard of Islamic Revolution. Iranian officials claimed the facility will serve as an operational base for cruise and ballistic missiles, as well as electronic warfare equipment. We'll keep that in mind. Hopefully we'll be, I don't know what Mr. Rubin's expertise is in cyber terrorism. I know that he was a victim of actual terrorism. He and his son were. So we know that he understands terrorism, but we'll hopefully he knows something about cyber terrorism. We will find out here shortly. But apparently they're doing that at this secret, super secret base. The missile base came in yet another violation of UN resolutions by Iran. I don't think that's how it's supposed to be read, but so be it. While Joe Biden is sending more cash to the Ayatollah in hopes to restore the nuclear deal. And quote, yada, yada, yada. Look, folks, bottom line is word on the street, word in various, you know, private chat rooms, common sense, all of these things point to one conclusion. Iran sees a very short window. They understand that it's probably a window that's only going to be open for maybe 4 years, maybe as little as 2 years, but a short window through which they can enact their plans to try to destroy America. And that does include terrorism. As a matter of fact, one can argue that between cyber terrorism and actual, say, bombings in or around, you know, large cities in the United States, these acts of terrorism that they allegedly have planned, there it's now or never for them. We're talking about a nation that is desperate. They were desperate before the pandemic. They were hurting. The sanctions that President Trump was putting on them, they were hurting desperately financially. And unfortunately, it did hurt the people. But the government of Iran was not able to do what they have normally done in the past, which is to rally the people behind a common enemy. The people were like, look, you guys, we keep hearing that you guys are giving all these money to terrorists while we're starving. What's the deal there? Who knows? We will see. We're going to get to Mr. Dave Rubin, but first I'm going to turn it over to my lovely, brilliant, talented, and utterly patriotic co-host and wife, Tammy, as she talks to us about Freedom First Coffee. We'll be right back.
Can you smell it? It's your favorite freshly ground coffee brewing in your favorite cup. If you're anything like me or my family, coffee is essential for our mornings. And even more essential is good quality coffee. Well, Freedom First Coffee is our preferred choice. Made from organically grown beans from Mexico and Peru that are then roasted here in the USA. So head on over to freedomfirstcoffee.com and choose our Founders Blend in medium or dark roast, ground or whole bean. That's freedomfirstcoffee.com. And make sure you use promo code NOCK, that's N-O-Q, for 10% off your order. And if you really want to be a freedom lover, choose a monthly subscription so you will never be without your Morning Joe. Again, that's freedomfirstcoffee.com.
Our next guest is the former mayor of Shiloh, Israel. He's also the author of the book, Trump and the Jews, and is founder and president of Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, established after he and his then three-year-old son were wounded in a terror attack. We are very blessed, pleased, and honored to have Mr. David Rubin joining us today on the Knock Report. Mr. Rubin, how are you today, sir?
Thank you. Good to be with you. I'm doing just fine.
Excellent. And you are calling in from Israel. That is correct?
That's right. I'm right here in the heart of Jerusalem, overlooking the old city of Jerusalem.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Now, I've been to your website, which is davidrubinisrael.com. I've been to your other one, which is Shiloh. I'm pronouncing it in the English, the American way, shilohisraelchildren.org. Both these websites are fantastic, and we'll be talking about them shortly. But I want to kind of cut straight to really the purpose of this interview, which was to discuss some information that you have regarding Iran-backed militia groups in Iraq, stuff that could actually affect us from a terrorist perspective, affect us as in the United States of America. Why don't you tell us about that?
Certainly. There are reports coming out that Iranian militia groups, and this is, you know, in Iran, you have militia groups that operate ostensibly independently, but they're not really independent. Militias in Iran are not independent of the Iranian regime, and the Iranian militias that are active in Iraq are also not independent of the Iranian regime. So important to understand that from the start. There's no such thing as lone wolf terrorism. Okay, you've ever heard that expression, JD?
Absolutely.
Okay, they talk about it, but there is nothing. I'm telling you as one in Israel, I'm telling you as one who was wounded in a terrorist attack and has witnessed the ramifications, the effects of terrorist attacks, there is no such thing as lone wolf terrorists. They're always paid by somebody. They're always sent by somebody. So we understand that from the start. Now, the militias that we're talking about have been very active in Iraq and in other parts of the Middle East. They recently attacked an American base housing American soldiers. And so this is something that's been going on for a long time. The intelligence reports tell us that they are active, and they're even talking about it. They're talking about it on their chat rooms, that they are active in the United States, and they're planting terror cells in the United States, including in Washington, D.C.
Wow, that is a bombshell. So just to make sure everybody's clear, we're talking about Iranian-backed terrorists in our nation's capital right here today that can and probably almost certainly are planning on some sort of attack here in the United States on American soil at some point in the future. You're getting this intelligence, obviously, from reliable sources. Do you trust it? Is this something that we should be concerned about and investigating right now?
Yes, I absolutely do trust the sources, and I trust them for a few reasons, not just because Israeli and American intelligence are among the best in the world. I trust it also because they are talking about it themselves. The militia groups are talking about it themselves in their chat rooms. And so this stuff is online, and they wouldn't be talking about it if they didn't want to make sure that their militias know about it, that the various militia groups, they're working together. Now, this is despite the thousands of National Guard troops that President Biden has, guarding the Capitol to continue to bring attention to the Capitol riot. They're active. They're active. Now, why else do I know that it's true? Also because of historical reasons. For those of your viewers and listeners who don't know, in 1979, something happened that has affected the world ever since. And that is the Iranian Islamic Revolution. The revolution carried out by radical Shiite Muslims headed by the Ayatollah Khomeini, who announced very clearly that the purpose of this revolution is to export the Islamic ideology around the world. That was his purpose then. That is his successor's purpose. And they are continuing to try to export their Islamic revolution around the world. They do it by supporting terrorist groups and militias throughout the Middle East and also apparently now in North America.
Now, I know that you are a supporter of President Trump. You wrote a book about him, Trump and the Jews. And of course, we now have President Biden in the White House. Do you believe that we've seen a lot of tension between Israel and Iran? We've seen Iran sort of saber-rattling, talking about what they're going to do with their nuclear program, making demands before they will, quote-unquote, re-enter the nuclear deal. Do you think that the timing is conspicuous? In other words, do you think that they're doing this because they know that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are in the White House?
Oh, it's clear. There's not even a question, not even the slightest doubt in my mind that when Biden came into office, he made it very clear before he came into office, he was saying that he wants to get back into the deal. He wants to get back into the Iran nuclear deal that Trump had destroyed and, at least ended American participation in, which effectively destroyed the deal. And as a result of that, Trump went forward and imposed heavy, heavy sanctions on Iran that had been removed as a result of that deal. So that's been the situation. The pressure, heavy pressure, has been on Iran. And sometimes when a wild animal is under pressure, he does crazy things. So President Biden has to be on alert. He has to understand that the problem is that now we're talking about a situation in which that crazy animal that I just referred to, which is the regime of Ayatollahs in Iran, of radical Muslims, that they have been feeling under pressure for several years under President Trump. And now President Biden came in and he projected weakness by asking to get put back into that nuclear deal. So the Iranian regime responded like any good negotiator does. They said, no way, we're not interested. And as a result of that, we now have a very tense situation in which the Iranians think that they can attack at will. They're supporting all their militias and their terrorist groups, and everything is being done full force now. They're going on the offensive. I know they didn't grow up in inner cities in the United States, but in the inner cities of the United States, where they play a mean game of basketball, they understand that the best defense is a good offense, and I understand that. Most Israelis understand that, and it's understood in the Middle East that you do not project weakness. So that's a mistake that Biden made from the beginning. I hope that he will learn from that mistake and will take a much stronger approach against Iran.
I hope that as well. We are on with Mr. David Rubin, reporting from Jerusalem. Sir, you've been mayor of Shiloh, Israel. You have had to run a country that was constantly under the threat of potential terrorism at any given moment. You yourself and your son were victims of a terrorist attack. What can we learn from you? What advice would you give to us, not just as American citizens, but let's say that Joe Biden or Kamala Harris or somebody in the White House today, they're listening, they're watching this episode. What advice would you give them as far as how do we deal with this threat that is here on our soil today?
Well, it needs to be addressed on several levels. You cannot confront radicals, and that includes Muslim radicals, without attacking the problem on several levels. Okay, there is, everyone always thinks, well, if you want to confront them, you have to confront it militarily. Well, yes, you do have to confront it militarily, but there are a lot of other ways. Okay, there's also cyber warfare, which is going on today, that under the radar, most Americans are not aware of it, but it's truly a war in motion at this point, the cyber warfare that's going on between Israel and the United States and Iran, opposite Iran. Then you have on the educational level. You have to make sure that people are aware of what's going on. A lot of people really do not have a clue. They think that since 9/11, everything's been peachy dandy and it's calm. And well, the only reason it was calm during the Trump years was that Trump was using the old Reagan approach of peace through strength, that you project strength. And even if you sound like a crazy New Yorker when you're doing it, which Trump sometimes did, you project strength, and you project strength, they understand it. Okay, I'm speaking to you from the heart of Jerusalem. Okay, Jerusalem is a very Jerusalem, Israel, the Middle East. It's a very bad neighborhood. I mean, I love it. I love being here, but we're talking about a bad neighborhood. When you're in a bad neighborhood, you better watch yourself. You better be careful. You better be tough. Because if you don't project toughness and let the bully know that you're going to stand up for yourself, then you're going to have problems. So that's my recommendation to the Biden administration, and I hope that they will succeed in projecting that toughness. Because if they want peace, which they always talk about, they just want peace and love between people. Just like during the Woodstock Festival, you hear it from Democrats all the time, that if they really want that, if they really want that peace and love, I don't know about if they'll get the love from the Iranians, but they will get the peace if they show strength.
I agree wholeheartedly. I have two more questions for you, but before we get to those, I want to give you an opportunity to talk about your projects at davidrubinisrael.com, at shilohisraelchildren.org, and anything else you're doing, any upcoming books. Tell us, what does David Rubin have on the horizon?
Okay, well, I appreciate that question, and I'll have to make a distinction between the two, because basically I wear two hats. There's the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, which was started after my three-year-old son and I were wounded in a terrible terrorist attack, a shooting attack on our car as we were coming home from an outing one day in Jerusalem. Halfway home to Shiloh, the car was hit with a massive barrage of bullets, AK-47 assault rifles that were being fired by terrorists, Palestinian terrorists. They shot up the car. They shot me in my leg. They shot my son in his head. Thank God the bullet that went into his head and through his neck missed his brainstem by 1 millimeter. So we survived. We feel blessed, but there are so many children that have been traumatized by the terrorism. And as a result of that, I started the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund for the purpose of healing that trauma and restoring some of the lost innocence to the lives of these children. So we have over 2,000 children on one campus alone, and we have a lot of other projects that are active, but that's where our main focus is, on that campus where we have over 2,000 children in our therapeutic, educational, integrative, therapeutic, educational program, where we use music therapy and art therapy and horses and small animals. We have a petting zoo and a horse farm. All of this is to heal the trauma of the terror victim children and restore some of the lost innocence to their lives. So anyone who wants to find out more about the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund should go to Shiloh spelled S-H-I-L-O-H, ShilohIsraelChildren.org, ShilohIsraelChildren.org. And to find out more about Trump and the Jews, which still is my latest book until the new book comes out, which will be coming out soon. And the title of that will be Confronting Radicals, What America Can Learn from Israel. So that will be coming out pretty soon, in sometime in April. So yes, davidrubinisrael.com, davidrubinisrael.com. Then get information about all of my books on that website.
Absolutely, and they will be able to buy it on Amazon or and other booksellers here in the United States.
Absolutely. We have a link from davidrubinisrael.com that goes straight to the appropriate page on Amazon, and they can buy it from there. Or they could just go straight into Amazon if they prefer. Go to books and Trump and the Jews, type it in,
and find you. That's fantastic. Two more questions. Before that, you had mentioned terrorism, but you made a note of cyber terrorism. Now, this is a topic that the United States and Israel have been very, in lockstep when it comes to fighting cyber terrorism, especially from Iran, but also against other players. Iran, for being a country that is relatively, I wouldn't say non-sophisticated, but they started off behind us, and yet in recent years there are indications that they have made progress in leaps and bounds when it comes to cyber terrorism, when it comes to worldwide propaganda. They are now, and of course when it comes to just straight up terrorism, they are the top state funding organization in the world. So my question for you is, when it comes to cyber terrorism, have they advanced as far as many have predicted? Are they a true cyber threat to the United States in the same way that, say, a China or a North Korea are, or are they actually advanced beyond that today?
Okay, that's a good question. You have to understand that, first of all, the short answer is yes. The long answer is that Iran and the other two powers that you referred to, China and North Korea, you have to understand they're all working together. They have been cooperating behind the scenes for a very long time. So if you mention Iran and Iran's level of cyber terror and the threat and nuclear threat from Iran, you have to look to those other powers, those other nuclear powers, China and North Korea, which, obviously is on its way to being a nuclear power if nothing is done to stop them. So China obviously being the biggest threat to the free world that we have ever known. But yes, they're working together. They're working together. They're hand in hand, in lockstep, and it's critical for the free world to confront that, to confront it head on, and to confront it in all of the other ways that I described.
Absolutely. My last question for you, sir. We are coming up on the, what is this, fourth election in 2 years in Israel. I would say that the vast majority of Americans don't understand the Knesset process. They're not very familiar with how prime ministers work, what the role of the president there. The president of Israel is not like the president of the United States. They don't understand the 61 seats necessary and the power struggles between the various parties. It's not a two-party system. You have a lot of organizations that work together. If you could give us just a very brief understanding of what's coming up. I believe it's on March 23rd, as far as this new election. And then if you would, you don't have to, I'm not going to hold your feet to the fire, but if you want to give us some predictions, I would love to hear them.
Okay, well, it's like this. I'm just going to try and give you the short version, even though there is no short version. Okay, so Israel's a parliamentary system. It's a very unwieldy parliamentary system. We have 10 political parties that get into the Knesset. That's the Israeli parliament. So 10 political parties in the Knesset. If you win the election, meaning, you know, we go to the polls, we vote for a party, we don't vote for an individual. And the leader of the party that gets either the most votes or the most recommendations is the one that becomes prime minister. So it's like this. We have an election on March 23rd. The according to the polls, Netanyahu's Likud party, Prime Minister Netanyahu's Likud party will get the most votes. Those are the predictions. So, but there are also all these other parties. There are all these medium-sized parties. They're all going to have there'll be election results. And then the president, who's kind of like Queen Elizabeth in Israel, it's a ceremonial post, except he doesn't have any controversial grandchildren. His name is Ruvi Rivlin. He's a great guy. Anyhow, so his only really meaningful task is to appoint the candidate that is going to be in tasked with forming the governing coalition, putting together those 61 seats. So Netanyahu, say, will have about 30 seats. Let's say, for example, all of the other parties, a majority of the other parties say that they'll recommend Netanyahu to be prime minister, that he's the one that has the best chance of forming the coalition. So the president, Rivlin, he points to Netanyahu. He says, okay, you're being given the chance. You have 30 days to form a governing coalition. So he'll try to get, enter negotiations. We'll try to get all the parties to join with him, as many parties as possible. And then he'll go to the president and he'll say, I have the 61 seats or more, and I have commitments to form a coalition, my Likud party and all these other parties. Okay, now if that happens, well, okay, great. We have a stable government. It could also be somebody else, though. It could be that Netanyahu's Likud will get the most votes in the election, but another party, one of the moderate-sized parties, will get the most recommendations to be prime minister. And in that case, they're going to get to work and start forming their coalition, but getting all the parties to come together to negotiate. And it could be that somebody else will form the governing coalition. It's really up in the air now. Israel is primarily a right-of-center population, and the chances are that whoever becomes prime minister, whether it's Netanyahu or somebody else, that person will be a right-of-center individual with fairly conservative views. So that's my prediction, that it's going to be either Netanyahu or probably Netanyahu or Naftali Bennett or Gideon Saar. It'll be one of those three. I'd say the odds are that Netanyahu will win and will be the one appointed to form the coalition. Whether he'll succeed in forming the coalition is definitely an open question. It's going to be interesting.
And for those in the audience, I want you to understand that that truly was the short answer because it is very complex, a very complex system, which is why this will be their fourth election in the last 2 years. But, you know, that process has weaknesses, obviously, as we've seen, but it also has some great strength because they are able to do things. You know, they have their government generally works in lockstep with each other. Once they can form a solid coalition, they are able to get stuff done. Whereas with us, we could have a Republican in the White House and a Democrat controlled, Nancy Pelosi controlled House. And all of a sudden it's just deadlock and they're just fighting against each other and getting nothing done. Whereas Israel focuses on building that coalition between the Knesset, which is essentially like the legislature, the cabinet, which really runs things, and the cabinet is chosen from. Well, anyway, I don't want to overcomplicate things. No, I like their system.
No, JD, you explained it very clearly, actually. And the yes, you always, almost always, will have a prime minister and a Knesset that are working together, because it has to be formed. The previous government was an exception to the rule because they formed this what they called the unity government, which was really a disunity government of the left and the right. Never works. Yeah. No. What you most likely will have as a result of this election, assuming someone is able to put together that majority coalition, then it will be a government that works. If he can't form that majority coalition, then the government won't have a chance of working, and then we'll go to the fifth election in 2 years. So I'm hoping that won't happen. Everyone's hoping that won't happen. So really, we'll have to talk after the election, because that's when the real negotiations will begin.
Well, that's election is a week from today, I believe. So yes, we'll have to get you on next week then, because I will have questions. I'm sure my audience will have questions. Look, we do things very differently here. I'm not saying necessarily better or worse, but for the most part, we're used to the gridlock and we're used to the type of, you know, I guess you could say conflict between the politicians that Israel has not had to deal with, generally speaking, in recent history until the last couple of years.
Let me say just one short thing.
Please.
In conclusion on this topic. We do have a lot of conflict between the left and the right. But in this election on Tuesday, everyone will be going to the polls, literally, meaning we do not have mail-in ballots except in extreme situations. So you will not have trucks coming in with 30,000 ballots for one candidate. We go to the polls. We believe in going to the polls. Yes, we'll go with masks on, but we will go to the polls.
And that is, you know, I think that's the first time, and I thank you for that, sir. That's the first time in the last at least 4 months that I've actually gotten to smile at the debacle of an election system that we've had here during this last election. I got to smile. You got me to chuckle. Usually it just infuriates me, but you're absolutely right. I guess at this point we're ready to push forward. Mr. David Rubin, I know that we set aside 20 minutes. I know we've gone over that. I do want to give you one last opportunity to say whatever it is you need to say. I'm going to do some more research on this Iranian plot, basically, that you're talking about. I have some sources that I can contact as well. This is terrifying. It really is truly, yeah. I mean, this is something that needs to be dealt with appropriately. So I greatly appreciate that information. With that said, is there anything else that you would like to tell us before we sign off from Jerusalem, Israel?
Yeah, well, I'd just like to say, as you know, conclusion of of this topic of the Iranians, just beware of radicals. Okay, there are all kinds of radicals. There are the radicals that were rioting in the streets of America for all of 2020, and even before, and even after, that burned down government buildings and tear down statues and monuments to American heroes. Beware of those radicals, but also beware of those Muslim radicals that are trying to undo the United States as a Judeo-Christian civilization, because America is a great country, you know. And I live in Israel. I was born in the United States and I was raised in the United States, so I do know America, and I still love America. Even though I'm here in Israel. So stand up for your values, stand up for your heritage, and be proud of it.
I certainly am, and I appreciate those words. Mr. David Rubin, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Lord willing, we will be back very soon with another episode. But in the meantime, you all stay strong, stay safe, and God bless.